This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. In the year 2000, the American Institute of Architects asked its members to look back on the last 100 years and pick the building of the 20th century. You might think they'd pick a skyscraper, but no, they chose a little house in the country about 70 miles outside Pittsburgh. The house is called Falling Water, and it was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. At the time, Wright said he wanted his client, Edgar Kaufman, to be as close to nature as possible.
Here you have a house which really capitalized upon a beautiful site on a stream where Mr. Kaufman loved to go and sit. And I said, why not build your house here?
As part of our series on American icons, we asked Peter Crimmins to visit Falling Water and figure out what is so special about this house.
I'm standing at a point above Bear Run in western Pennsylvania. When Edgar Kaufman first asked Frank Lloyd Wright to design a house for him along this river, he imagined that the house would go here, where I'm standing now.
He just wanted glitz. He wanted something amazing to look at. And Wright probably could have given him that in all kinds of ways, but Wright had his own agenda.
Franklin Toker is the author of the book Falling Water Rising. Edgar Kaufman was the owner of a large department store in Pittsburgh in the 1930s. He wanted to break into the upper crust of Pittsburgh society, and a weekend house in the country with a view of a waterfall would have had the requisite dazzle. But Frank Lloyd Wright took it a step further.
Wright proposes to Kaufman that he put his house spiraling out over a waterfall. A completely absurd, almost criminal action architecturally.
The house is on top of the waterfall. The river flows out from the foundation, and a pair of balconies jut out from the house over the falls. They're cantilevered like drawers pulled out from a dresser, rather precariously pulled out from a dresser. They're 16 feet long, and they're made of concrete. The most dramatic view of the house is from downstream, where the house itself is a rock ledge mimicking the surrounding sandstone, and those balconies seem to magically hover over the waterfall. It's a famous image, and it's one that often shows up on posters and wall calendars and magazine covers. The house now is an architectural landmark maintained by the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy, and it's open for tours. If you ever visit the house, the waterfall is the last thing you'll see. The approach to the house is from the ridge above the house.
As you come around this bend, about right here, is almost the aha moment. And it's not what you expected. We don't see the waterfall at all.
I'm walking with Linda Wagoner. She's the director of Falling Water.
You're not approaching it head on. You know, you're coming at it at an angle, so it has this great dynamic quality. You have this building that sort of, you know, takes shape almost like a puzzle through the woods.
Falling Water is a house of contradictions. When it was completed in 1938, it was instantly famous. It even made the cover of Time magazine. If Edgar Kaufman wanted a show-off house, he certainly got that. But this building of the century is kind of hard to find. It's tucked away in a thick forest in western Pennsylvania. If you drive out there, it's really easy to get lost.
It is a show-off house to some degree, but it's not a show-off house, I think, as we've come to think of show-off houses by today's standards. It's very small. It's under 3,000 square feet. It's not a McMansion at all. It's a show-off, I think, more of ideas than it is of look at me. But, you know, there's certainly an element of that, too.
Frank Lloyd Wright was already a celebrated architect when Edgar Kaufman hired him. His early designs in Chicago were so innovative, they attracted architects from Europe who would flock to Chicago to see his buildings and then go back home to Europe and build on his ideas.
He always claimed that he invented modern architecture, which was typical overstatement, but it was also kind of true. If one person could have been said to have invented modern architecture, it was Frank Lloyd Wright.
That is Witold Rybczynski, professor of architecture at the University of Pennsylvania.
Modernism took a different direction from what he thought it should. His kind of modernism really was not what the Europeans were doing.
Those Europeans are the heavy hitters of modernism. Le Corbusier, Walter Gropius, and Mies van der Rohe. Frank Lloyd Wright was known to wander around his studio with a fly swatter, and before killing flies, he would name them. Gropius, Corbusier, Mies, whack, whack, whack.
He considered them the enemy. This was his enemies list.
Ada Louise Huxtable is the architecture critic for the Wall Street Journal.
He represented the natural, the organic. They represented technology, functionalism. He was a humanist and a romantic. They were technocrats who believed that they could mold life in the ideal of industrial production.
You can add to that list of enemies the architect and curator Philip Johnson. He once dismissed Wright as the most important architect of the 19th century. In 1932, Frank Lloyd Wright is 65 years old. Many regarded him as a once brilliant architect, but maybe it was time to retire. That year, Philip Johnson put together a show for the Museum of Modern Art of new architecture, which he called the International Style.
Wright wasn't in it in the original formulation of the show. And somebody, trustee or somebody, said, can't you find anybody American? You have to use all European examples. They were being so doctrinaire, they could not include his very personal view of architecture.
As he said to his apprentice, I'm going to beat the international style at their own game.
Linda Wagoner takes me through the house.
As you walk in, sort of low ceiling, dark, compacted space, a lot like a cave. The fire blazing and the kettle simmering over the fire. Very much the symbolic shelter, ancient shelter. And that's juxtaposed with this, where you feel a bit of danger out here. You know, low parapet walls, you're hanging out in space on a cantilever over the waterfall, in a place where people are just not normally likely to find themselves. It's more a place where a bird would find itself, not a human.
In some ways, it's claustrophobic. In some ways, it's exhilarating.
Ed Rami is an architect based in Philadelphia who visits Falling Water almost every year. He's been there about 20 times.
In some ways, it's cold. In some ways, it's warm. In some ways, I wouldn't want to spend another minute there, and in other ways, I could lay down and die there comfortably.
I did stay in it. My husband and I had the master bedroom over the waterfall. It's a house that has great intimacy. It has great warmth. And the sound was in the house, in the most beautiful way, almost like a musical background.
Everywhere and everything, nature is indulging in pattern. Music is pattern, the pattern of sound. Architecture is pattern, the pattern of structure, of materials.
Frank Lloyd Wright liked to indulge in pattern on the piano.
A building, if it's a good building, is almost a living thing, like a tree, like anything organic in nature.
The materials used to build Falling Water are from the site. So when you stack the stone quarried from the site on stones that are uncut, you're extending stone with the same stone. It's a continuous motion or a continuous gesture.
Today, one of the greatest living architects in America is Richard Meier, known internationally for his large projects like the Getty Center in Los Angeles.
You know, when I was a student of architecture at Cornell, Frank Lloyd Wright, in fact, came to campus to give a series of lectures. We would not only sit in his lectures and listen to every word that he had to say, but follow him around from one place to another.
But even among his admirers, Wright can be problematic.
I learned from my own point of view that Wright was wrong. Architecture is man-made. It doesn't grow the way a tree grows. It doesn't change with the seasons. What we make as architecture relates to nature. It reflects nature. It can heighten one's awareness of nature. But it, in and of itself, is not natural.
My name's Albert Olwer. I'm on the maintenance department at Falling Water. It's not quite like maintaining a regular house. Up in the bathroom, the flush valve went bad, and they had to take part of the wall out to get into it to replace the flush valve because everything is behind the wall.
I like it. Now, I like just to go visit, but I don't know that I'd just like to live down in there.
This is Albert Oler's mother, Dorothy. She's been a neighbor of Falling Water almost all her life.
I like to see drapes at my windows, and that's what I'm used to, you know. I mean, but it's different. You have to understand it's different. There's no other house like it.
There is no other house like it, and that's the rub. Nothing like it came before, which is why it became so famous, but nothing like it came after, either.
He is able to reestablish himself with Falling Water as an important architect. What Falling Water did to the rest of architecture, I think that's the bigger question. I'm not sure that it did much of anything.
His early career, up till 1910 or so, 1920, he was enormously influential. His work at the end of his life, on the other hand, have virtually no influence at all. Sort of the Guggenheim Museum, and including Falling Water, but these kind of very science fiction-y buildings with strange curves, and I mean, some of them look like flying saucers, some of them look, they really look like they landed from somewhere.
Today, your average homeowner usually wants something sensible. A client once complained to Frank Lloyd Wright that the roof was leaking rainwater onto his desk. And Frank Lloyd Wright reportedly replied, "Move your desk." To an architect like John Eifler, who practices in Chicago and has restored many Frank Lloyd Wright houses, the lasting legacy of a building like Falling Water may not be its practicalities, but rather its vision.
It reminds the profession as a whole that just doing a building that, you know, keeps the water out, that keeps its occupants comfortable, which many right buildings didn't, but, you know, it, just to meet, you know, basic program requirements of a box or a shed or whatever it is that one's working on, it is not enough. Yeah, these are really cultural statements. Buildings very much need to respond to the aspirations or the ambitions of our culture as a whole. And I think Wright provides the kind of backup that many of us need to continue and work hard and do good buildings.
So long, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Falling Water was used by the Kaufmans as a weekend home for 20 years. The Kaufmans did build other houses. In fact, they hired Richard Neutra, who was one of Frank Lloyd Wright's rivals, to build a superb modernist house in Palm Springs. But Falling Water was their favorite. And we know this because Edgar Kaufman and his wife, Lillianne, are buried here. The family crypt is on the property, but I'm not allowed to tell you where. For Studio 360, I'm Peter Crimmins.
Architects may come and architects may go and never change your point of view.
You can find out more about Falling Water and all the American icons in our series, from Moby Dick to Barbie, at our website, Studio360.org.
So long, Frank Lloyd Wright. All of the nights we've harmonized till dawn.
That's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening to Studio 360 today. I hope you'll join us again next week. Studio 360 is produced by WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Our production team includes
Julie Burstein,
Vital Malad,
David Krasnow,
Michelle Siegel,
Ave Carrillo,
Derek John,
Sarah Lilly,
Eric Malinsky,
Monica Carrier,
Adam Walton,
Lori Ann Agnesi.
And our theme music is by David Van Tegum. And special thanks for the tape of Joseph Papp to the Rodgers and Hammerstein Archives of Recorded Sound at the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts.
Studio 360 is funded in part by Ken and Lucy Lehman, supporting CARE in its efforts to alleviate global poverty, on the web at care.org, the Horace W. Goldsmith Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. Studio 360's American Icons project is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Great Ideas Brought to Life.
PRI, Public Radio International.